All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
Tap tap. Tap tap. Double tap.
This week on Double Tap, how will it all end for Nathan Drake in the Uncharted finale? And Land's End.
We decided to go ahead with designing the game to not use any inputs. As soon as you're touching something in the real world, you're suddenly aware that you're not just in this virtual space.
Hello and welcome to Double Tap. I'm Alice Taplin. This week, we catch up with the coolest VR game of them all and find out how it all works on the Samsung VR headset, the Gear, as we explore Land's End. But first, we're just days away from the release of Uncharted 4: A Thief's End, the eagerly anticipated final instalment of Naughty Dog's Uncharted series. And with new features aplenty, they're set to give longtime fans the big ending they deserve. But is it really the end? I'm joined by the Cheat Codes podcast Joe Arroyo to talk about the game and the future of the franchise at the hands of Sony.
We were meant for this, Nathan. You, me, together, we were destined for something great.
I think they tried to focus more on the competitive multiplayer aspect and maybe ramp it up in not an esports way, but try and find a way to make it even more competitive. I'm a huge advocate of the PvE experience. So I really like the just single player experience a lot, especially in these games, because they're just, you know, incredibly cinematic and it's fun to play a movie basically. I wasn't as big in the multiplayer, but I would say that I spent quite a lot of hours playing the multiplayer in the third one, and equally will with this. It may not be my cup of tea, but I have a tendency to get addicted to their multiplayers for some reason, so I did like it a lot. I just didn't get a lot of time with it, so I can't say for sure.
Took a long time for him to get out of this game.
He's meant for this life.
Oh crap!
Last I checked, we're all a bunch of thieves digging around where we shouldn't.
Shame we're not on the same side.
What are you most looking forward to about Uncharted 4?
Oh, I'm most looking forward to seeing how they wrap it up, how they put a bow on it.
But do you think that this really will be the last one? Because I know Naughty Dog have said that they don't want to make any more, but then they also said that Sony own it, so they could just force them to make another one, or just make somebody else make another one.
Right. It'll be the end of an era, I guess I should say. And so for all intents and purposes, it is the last one for me, because it'll be like Halo. It'll, you know, they'll have this really great experience all the way through, you know, Halo Reach, and then they pass it on to the publisher, who reassigns it to another company, and then from then on out, it's kind of like not really worth it. So I'm going to treat this one like the last one, and probably like a lot of Halo fans, I'll play whatever the next one ends up being under whatever publisher or whatever studio gets a hold of it, but I'll probably be skeptical, and it may or may not be worth continuing.
Let's get the show on the road.
One of the things that people were getting quite excited about was the ability to drive vehicles around, because you haven't been able to do that in previous ones.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see how they do it, and a lot of stuff you have to deal with trying to make driving vehicles actually entertaining as well, because then you skirt that line of like, oh, it's too realistic, and that's not necessarily fun. Like, I don't really like the idea of getting in my car and driving around the city, so I wouldn't want to do that in a game if it felt the same way. A lot of people can see it now, because most of the video footage they're releasing for kind of the teasers and stuff was in-game gameplay of them riding around in the Jeep or something, in like the mud and stuff like that. It's a really cool scene, and it's equally cinematic in the car, which I was a little worried about, it being that thing where you just kind of drive around and go from destination to destination, but they kept the same flow where the characters are still talking to each other the whole time, and there's a lot of good moments that break it up with like a fun story element. So I think they're going to do it really well.
And I was going to say, it kind of seems to work well, the sort of driving around and exploring element, with the fact that they've said that there'll be 10 times more explorable space. So you could sort of, I assume, drive around and explore that, or run around and explore that to your kind of heart's content, whatever you want to do. But how's that going to kind of compare to the previous ones? Because they were a lot more linear.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. And you have to kind of like, you have to like that kind of game to enjoy Uncharted. And if you do, then it's like the cream of the crop. And that's why I love it so much, because I expect that. So I am a little nervous about the prospect of this, because one of my least favorite things about the game is when you want to platinum on a game like this, then you have to do this thing where you just find the secret hidden thing to hang on or climb up so you can find this treasure that you don't really care about, just so you can say you collected all of them. And now that there's a 10 times more space, it's 10 times more areas I have to mess around in just so I can platinum in this game. And I don't know. If it doesn't break the story too much and they find a way to give you the opportunity to explore but keep it on rails if you want to be, then I think it'll work out fine.
You ever wonder, like, different choices, how we might have ended up?
No. I like the hand we've been dealt.
So one thing I saw that people didn't like so much was that they were adding dialogue options in some form or another. I don't know what your thoughts are on dialogue options in Uncharted 4.
I don't know. I like the idea of it. But I'm fairly aware that with a game like Uncharted, it is very on rails. They're telling a very specific story. So we all know that we'd be fooling ourselves if we believed that we would actually affect the outcome as a result of making certain decisions. So this is the kind of game where I think it's literally just like a weird, like, here's some fluff. Like, oh, somebody might say something different because you said something different. But other than that, I mean, how far can they really go in changing the tree so much that, like, at the end, something different actually occurs? I sincerely doubt they're going to do anything like that. So it kind of doesn't matter to me, I guess. I want to know what happens if I don't choose anything. Can I just not press the extra buttons?
Maybe he just stands there for ages and the person's like, hello.
Well, I mean, Until Dawn was like one of the best adapters of the doing nothing is a choice. So when you're given four options, you always have five options. And I thought that was phenomenal, because you always forget that you shouldn't sometimes make a decision at all. I don't know if you played that at all, but it was great. That whole concept of just do nothing. Hopefully they do something like that where I don't have to press a button.
For those who prove worthy, paradise awaits. Took a long time for him to get out of this game.
He's meant for this life.
How would you like it to end?
Oh, gosh, what a question. I don't know. I'm one of those advocates for the hero dies kind of ending. So I want to see. Yeah, I know. It's
harsh.
Tragic. It's so tragic. I've been watching too much Game of Thrones. So I don't know. I think it would be interesting to see how they handled it if Nathan Drake dies. But because Sony still owns it, from a political standpoint, I can see why obviously that's not going to be the outcome.
Nathan Drake, that two-bit thief. Risking it all for some piece of treasure. I guess that's how they know me. How they'll remember me.
And if you want to hear more of Joe, check out the Cheat Codes podcast right here on Audioboom. Now, here's Jamie Wareham with the gaming news.
Classic games Space Invaders and Sonic the Hedgehog have beat the likes of Tomb Raider and Minecraft to make it onto this year's additions to the Video Game Hall of Fame. Of 15 finalists, only 6 new games made it onto Strong National Museum of Play's World List. Naughty Dog fans are in for a nostalgic treat, thanks to an elaborate Easter egg in the new Uncharted game. The scene's going to involve Nathan Drake playing an emulated version of Crash Bandicoot. It was one of the first games that Naughty Dog released back in 1996. And San Jose's Cogswells College has become the first school to create a virtual reality and augmented reality course. It aims to help students bridge the preparation gap by working on the groundbreaking technologies in the field. And in esports news, Circa Esports have announced the addition of Street Fighter V player Long Fei Nguyen to their fighting game roster. Circa's CEO said the move into Street Fighter was a long time coming. And Team Envious is building an esports facility in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's going to be complete with a studio, arena, offices, a land center, and a training facility. It will also be used to host esports tournaments and technology camps.
Land's End is the virtual reality game storming the Samsung Gear Store ever since its release. At the London Games Festival Virtual Reality Summit, producer Jamie caught up with the development team to find out how you move around the game hands-free.
Hi, I'm Matthew Newcomb. I'm a senior game developer at Us2 Games. So Land's End is a virtual reality exploration experience where you're transported to this other world and you're exploring it through gaze and looking around and discovering what's happened to this ancient race through discovery of artifacts.
You also massively undersold it there because it's like one of the biggest games on the App Store. So tell us about how that came about.
So we actually signed a deal with Samsung a while back to produce a virtual reality game. And originally we were planning to do it in about 4 months, but it actually ended up taking about a year and a half until we got what we wanted to and felt really happy with it. But for us, we were always engaged with what the technology promised and the future that virtual reality kind of held. So we were super excited to be doing something, and especially on mobile VR, which benefits from not being tethered and, you know, everybody can have access to it.
The way that people can play this game is with the Gear VR. Is that an essential part of playing the game, or can anyone do it without the headset?
No, it's absolutely essential. So there's obviously HTC Vive and Oculus Rift, but because we made this specifically to be untethered, so you can turn around as much as you need to, you don't get caught up with cables. We only have it on Gear VR.
Okay, and talk us about why that's important, because for virtual reality, you made this very interesting point that if there's something that's outside the virtual reality, you lose that sense of being lost in it.
Right, absolutely. So for us, immersion is really key, and to be able to put players in this environment, but also sell them on it and make them feel like they don't need to kind of be brought back into the actual real world. And this really gets the best impact in terms of emotional response and immersion and so on. We decided to go ahead with designing the game to not use any inputs or controllers because as soon as you're touching something in the real world, you're suddenly aware that you're not just in this virtual space and you're actually also having to interact in this real space. And especially for people who aren't comfortable or haven't used a controller before, it turns into a point of frustration and really brings them out of the experience and out of the immersion.
So to walk us through some of those kind of exploration techniques that you've got in your game.
Sure, so we use what we call look points. So they're kind of white spheres that are around the environment. And when you look at them for, you know, half a second or less, you start moving towards them. And for us, it was important that it was an intuitive way to interact with movement. So these look points are something you kind of, your attention is naturally drawn towards. And then we use visual and audio cues so that your gaze is kind of magnetized towards the center. And as soon as you view one of them, you suddenly understand how to move in this world. And we keep the movement as kind of natural as possible to make it as comfortable as possible. So people really feel that they can explore this environment with, you know, full autonomy.
Totally, and that's how the puzzles work as well. They use the same kind of type of engagement.
Yeah, exactly. So we use the same input, that same kind of audio and visual feedback that I was talking about, to also guide the player to the puzzles. And the puzzles themselves are kind of based in reality. So we have sort of physics type objects that you can play with and drag around. And we also have, kind of dot-to-dot puzzles that we call star lines. So everything is kind of designed with this idea of intuition. And that means that we don't have to instruct the player how to play the game. We can just put the headset on them, even if they've never really played games before, and they very quickly understand how they can interact in the world.
So there's obviously three big competing VR tools. You're biased to one, but I think your game has learned an interesting lesson about immersion. Will you tell us about what other kind of VR makers need to learn about that as well?
It's a really interesting question, because with Vive and Rift, you have a much higher level of fidelity. So in a sense, you can sell people on how great the environment looks, and that helps get closer towards photorealism, which ultimately helps lead people into believing they're in another place. But really what we found with Land's End is that kind of untethered experience you can get with mobile devices is even more immersive than pure fidelity. Even with kind of lo-fi sort of graphics, it feels great. And so the other point of contention for us is that we wanted to create an experience that was accessible for everybody. And I kind of talked before about how we wanted to make something that anybody can enjoy, even with no experience of games. And the great thing about mobile devices is everybody has a phone. And I think we can all kind of envisage a future where every handset manufacturer has created a kind of virtual reality experience. And then being able to make this for phones means we can easily make it accessible for lots of people.
Now, we see this a lot with techs. You know, with the first televisions, there was two different types, and the BBC ended up choosing one. And, you know, more recently, HD, Blu-ray. Are we going to reach that point with virtual reality with those three different headsets?
I think in the short term, there's going to be more fragmentation. There's enough differences between each of the competitors at the moment that it's not just a case of, like, you know, which one looks better or, you know, which one feels better. They're all quite fundamentally different, and they all have different input mechanisms. And I actually think we'll see a continuation of it fragmenting. There's also HoloLens, which is an augmented reality thing from Microsoft. And so I'm not sure what I can say about 10 years from now, but I think at least in the next 5 years, we'll see an increasingly large amount of devices rather than it kind of narrowing down to a single one.
Thanks to Joe and Us Two Games, who developed Land's End, for being on the show this week. Join me next week as we take a look at Homefront: The Revolution before its release. See you then.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production, presented by Alice Taplin and produced by Jamie Wareham.
Tap, tap. Double tap.